All right, welcome to the free stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. Week 2 or 3 of the preseason edition, depending on how you look at it. Post-game edition of the show brought to you by Bill Curry Ford. I am Bobby Fenton. Did it a little bit differently this week, doing a Monday morning show as there was a lot going on over the weekend, not the least of which was the game on Friday night. So we've got a lot to get to aside from the game itself, which obviously was not easy on the eyes, but there were definitely things that happened that we're going to want to talk about, as well as some stuff going on around the league that could shape the future of the league for years to come. All kinds of stuff. We got fridge schedules. We got a lot to get to today. So without further ado, thank you for joining me. And like I always tell you guys, it's a pleasure to be on this website, the best, the number one place for Bucks coverage anywhere on the internet, anywhere, period. And we're really getting going now that the season is underway. The show brought to you by Bill Curry Ford, where right now and always, and this is something that you're not going to get anywhere else, you've got the nationwide lifetime warranty. This is on any vehicle they have, new and pre-owned vehicles on the lot. It includes unlimited years, unlimited miles, as long as you own the car and you take care of the basic service that you're supposed to, this warranty applies. Buy the car at Bill Curry Ford. Yeah, you go buy a car somewhere, they give you, you know, whatever it is, 6 months, 3 months, a year, whatever. You go buy the car at Bill Curry Ford and you do your oil changes like you're supposed to do, do everything you're supposed to do, and the engine blows like 3 or 4 years later, you go back there and you're good. That's what the lifetime warranty, as long as you're the owner of the car still, you get the lifetime warranty, which is unparalleled. I mean, you won't see anything like that. I've never seen anything else like it. But Bill Curry Ford does it. You can browse the website, BillCurryFord.com. That's C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. Check out all the inventory before you go down there in person if you want to. Of course, it's always good to go check out the lot itself right there where it's always been, North Dale Mabry, just a mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry, right past Hillsboro. They're on the right if you're heading north, and on the left if you're heading south. And they've been serving the Tampa Bay area from there proudly for almost 60 years now. So go see them and go check out the website, BillCurryFord.com. On Friday night, just a mile south down the road from Bill Curry Ford at Raymond James and all over the Bay Area, it was raining a lot. And it was raining all day, all week last week. It's finally dried out now. But it was just that kind of night on Friday. It didn't seem like great conditions for a football game. But I'll tell you what, and I was there Friday. I was actually not in the press. I went to the press box before the game, but during the game, I was in the Dolphins TV truck because I do a little TV work sometimes, like a part-time thing that I've done for many years, and I've talked about on the show before. I do graphics and stuff like that. So a lot of times I work for these road crews that come in here. So I was doing the Dolphins show the other night, so I watched every down of that game, albeit not from the press box or from the seats, but from inside the TV truck. But before the game, because I got time before the game, I was out there on the field for pregame warm-ups and everything like that. And Raymond James Stadium has just a magnificent piece of turf. I mean, it's beautiful out there. I mean, all the rain we had, and I didn't go out like run a 40 on the field or anything, okay? I probably couldn't do that. I could have tried, and maybe nobody would have noticed. But being down there on the sidelines and just walking around, I kind of like hopped around on it a little bit. I mean, it is just like total mud everywhere else around town. Like, my yard drains well, and it was still very squishy. The Raymond James Stadium field with all that rain was like a carpet before the game. And, of course, it does get chewed up as the game goes on. That's inevitable. But that they really do. Hats off to whoever the Raymond James Stadium grounds crew is. And I don't know their names or anything like that. Because, I mean, there was a little bit of slickness, just a little bit, but no squish. The field paint looked immaculate. I mean, I wanted to hit a 7-iron right off of it. And you could run around, you could stop and start. Like, it's amazing what they can do with these fields. And I know even the old Sombrero was always rated, even as bad as the Bucks were during most of that time, always number one in the field rankings done by the players. They always loved the old Tampa Stadium field, and the Raymond James Stadium field is no different. And it shouldn't. I mean, in Florida, we should have nice grass, and it should be one of the best in the league. It certainly is. So the game, I didn't see a lot of the rain affecting gameplay too much on Friday night. There were some guys slipping. I'm sure it wasn't as easy to handle the ball, although there weren't a ton of fumbles or anything like that. But let's talk about the game real quick, because, you know, it being preseason, the minimal amount of time you see the actual people that you're going to see on the field once the real games start, you don't want to put too much into it, but the game was 6-6, and there was no touchdown scored until under 4 minutes left, okay? It wasn't easy to watch. A lot of people were complaining on Twitter, making the usual jokes and stuff about preseason football, and that's fine. It wasn't very easy to watch. But it did pick up in the fourth quarter if you're into this sort of outcome thing, which I know it doesn't matter, but hell, since I was there watching every down, you might as well have a little fun with it. And the Bucs, Bruce Arians said this much after the game. It's important to learn how to win. Now, the people who decided that game in the fourth quarter, when things were going back and forth, probably aren't, in fact, they really aren't the people that are going to need to learn how to win. The people that are going to decide those games weren't out there when this one was being decided. But as a team, even standing on the sidelines, there's an energy to it and there's a feeling to it. So when the Bucs scored to go up 13-6, you know, it was nice to see Ryan Griffin lead the team downfield and make that happen. They did get aided by a penalty, although it was a legitimate penalty. And it was also the first pass interference review in Bucs history. I know it wasn't official because it was a preseason game, but there was a pass interference no call on about a 30-yard, I don't want to call it a bomb, but a deep ball into the end zone down the sideline. And they didn't call it. Arians threw the red flag. They reviewed it. It was PI. Set the Bucs up down there in goal line, and they scored. That was great. Then the Dolphins came back, and this was not nice to see. Again, it wasn't our starting defense, but the Dolphins came back and scored and were able to make a two-point conversion. Of course, they don't care about a tie. So they went for two and got it, and now it's 14-13. Very little time left. Ryan Griffin, the Bucs go right back down, and Matt Gay, who is one of the people who will be playing a hand in these late decided games, if it comes down to that at any point in the season, comes in, hits a 48 yards, I think, something like that. And I was watching him in warm-ups, and I've seen him at camp a little bit this year, but that was in the indoor facility when I saw him. But I saw him in pregame, and this is with rain. It wasn't terribly windy, but it was still a little bit windy, and of course the rain, and even when it's not windy, like, the air is just different outside. It's a factor, you know, like indoors, everything's completely 100% antiseptic and neutral. And even when there's a light breeze, it's just different outside. And he was hitting those 62 yarders in warmups like they were extra points. I mean, they were hitting midway up the net. They weren't where you go, oh, is he going to make it? Oh, I mean, from 62, he was behind the midfield line. He was on the Bucs logo in pregame. I was watching him kick all those balls. So when they got it inside of 50, you felt like, okay, you know, he obviously got the leg for this. But this is still, it's preseason, but for him, it's a pressure kick. See, you can say it doesn't matter, but for Matt Gay, the nerves were probably maybe not quite regular season level for a game-winning kick, but it's a new team. He's never played in the NFL before. He's going to make the team. He's not trying. I mean, there's no competition despite what anybody says. But still, like, to miss a kick like that would set off all kinds of here-we-go-again type stuff with the fans, with the media. I'm sure Matt Gay knows who Roberto Aguayo is. I'm sure Matt Gay's aware of the Bucs' kicking history. Any little thing could start us down a bad road psychologically. All of us, including the kicker himself. But he stuck it, and the Bucs won 16-14. And that's a good thing, even though it's preseason and doesn't matter. It's still better to do that than the alternative. So that was really good to see. And like Bruce Arians said, you have to get used to winning. Nice to see the Bucs in a late-game situation pull that out. I'm not going to read any more into it than what it really is. But again, if you ask me, would you rather he make this kick and the Bucs win or not, I think we all would agree that that was better. So things spiced up in the last few minutes there of the game from an entertainment standpoint. From an X's and O's and football standpoint, there wasn't a ton to analyze in a game like that. But there were things. I mean, first of all, the offensive line. And not talking about the starting offensive line right now, because, I mean, that obviously is a question mark too. But even beyond that, they are real thin on the OL. And the starting OL is suspect. And if any little thing goes wrong, if anybody gets hurt, you know, DeMar Dotson's older. What if something happens to Donovan Smith? You know, any of them. Anybody on the inside, Ali Marpet, they're going to have some issues. They might have issues anyway, even if everything goes perfectly, to be quite honest, on the offensive line. But that is something that's going to be addressed. And again, what Bruce Arians said is, you know, we're not just counting the guys on our roster. We're looking at everybody. And what he means is, you know, there's 53 guys on a roster in the NFL, right? So right now, what is there, 90 on each team? So I didn't do this math before. I'm doing quick math in my head. That means there's 37 guys on each team that are going to get cut. And 37 times 32, again, I'm doing quick math, but roughly 37 times 32 is 900 guys plus. It's over 1,000 guys that are going to be out there once those cuts happen. And they don't all happen at once, but there's 1,000 guys right now plus. Whatever 37 times 32 is, it's 1,100 something, close to that, that are in camps right now that nobody else can have because they are belonging to one team. But once they're cut, anybody can have them. So on teams with more OL depth than others, there might be offensive linemen who are cut, but who are good enough to play in the NFL, just not good enough to make that one team. Bucks are going to be looking at, though, and not just the Bucks, lots of teams, but the Bucks especially, there will be people brought in that are cut from other teams that can definitely help this team. And there's nothing wrong with that. They're not good enough for one team, but they're good enough for us. At certain positions, yes. We'll also cut guys that aren't good enough for our team at a certain position that'll go on and end up making regular season rosters for other teams. It all shakes itself out once the cutdowns get going. But again, there's over 1,000 guys right now who have jobs temporarily who won't have them soon, and the Bucs would be mighty happy to give some of those offensive linemen jobs because they're really like in the weeds on offensive line right now. And there was a lot of pressure allowed on Friday night. Not that we needed Friday night to tell us this, but that was one thing that stood out to me. And if you look at all the things that I saw in the game, and again, very minimal playing time for most of the starters. Jameis had the one series. He was fine. The backup quarterback situation, I know Blaine Gabbert got brought in to be the backup quarterback. I'm not so sure that Ryan Griffin shouldn't be the two and Gabbert the number three. And again, this is hopefully something that doesn't come up much. We want Jameis Winston to be healthy and to go on and have a phenomenal season. But should anything happen, we know the score with Gabbert. He's been in the league. He's played in regular season games. He's been a starter. He's been a backup. He's been kind of somewhere in between. I have not been very impressed with him in the little bit I've seen of him in game action this year. I've never been impressed with him ever, really. Even as a senior at Missouri, when he threw a horrendous pick six in their bowl game to cost me a win in the bowl pool that I've run for 30 years. Ever since then, I've been off the Blaine Gabbert train. Have you ever seen somebody sack themselves the way that Blaine Gabbert can? Like, there was one play on Friday night, and he dropped back, and the pressure only came from one guy. It was off the right side. Like the right tackle got beat, and that one guy, the left defensive end for the Dolphins, did get pressure. But it wasn't like the pocket collapsed and there was nowhere to go. There was a lot of space. He just had to kind of dance around one guy. And I don't think the guy even got to him. And Gabbert kind of shuffled into that direction and then just sort of fell down. And I was like, wow, like he really sacked himself. Like, you can't teach a guy to do that. That's just an uncanny knack. And like, he had a whole wide open side. He could have just shuffled his feet a little bit with a couple sidesteps and bought several seconds of time and just down, just on the ground. And again, I know that Ryan Griffin is playing against maybe number threes instead of number two. Call it whatever you want. I think at this point, when you get down to like the bottom halves of these rosters, I think the lines are kind of blurred. Oh, he's a two instead of a three, or a three instead. Whatever. I think Ryan Griffin looks better than Blaine Gabbert, and I don't know if they'll pull the trigger on that and make him the backup quarterback, but he kind of should be. Plus, I kind of always been like, had this, I like Ryan Griffin, I don't know him, I kind of like him just from what I've seen in interviews and stuff, and it's just so weird to me that he's actually been on the rosters. Like, he's been in the league, he's a veteran, quote-unquote, by service time as far as how long he's been in the NFL, and he still has never actually officially played an NFL game. He's never taken a snap. And I really want to see that happen this year. Like, I hope it's because we're winning a game by like 30 points and they pull Jay. But can we get Ryan Griffin, like, can we let him throw and complete an NFL pass? He's been on, what is it, like 5-6 years now he's been in the league or something like that. Like, he's a veteran who actually has never played. And he's played tons of preseason snaps. I mean, he's played several games worth there. But I think he's better than Gabbert. I don't think it's saying a lot, but either way, that's just something to keep an eye on. But it's funny to me, I thought about this on Friday. And if you want to email me, by the way, email me. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is the email address. That's BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com. Or on Twitter, you can get me @BobbyGameDay. I've thought about this in the past too, but I thought about it on Friday night again. How hard NFL quarterback is to play, how highly, highly specialized it is, and how many other professions. I mean, if you're on an NFL roster right now as one of the top three quarterbacks, again, 32 teams, that's 96 quarterbacks, if you're in the top three of any of their depth charts, okay? So we're talking about the 96 best people in the world at doing something. And if you took the best 96 or the best 100 people in the world at almost anything, you'd be amazed at their abilities to do that thing. Whatever you, even the most mundane things, if I gave you the 100 best accountants in the world, you'd be like, oh yeah, this guy's the number 97 accountant in the world. The whole world, dude. Like, this guy is a guy you want in charge of your personal finances. You can trust this guy. He's a top 100 accountant worldwide. You know, whether it's neurosurgeon, whether it's second grade teacher, whether it's accountant, you know, whether it's mechanic, if you're getting the top 100 of that profession in the world, you're getting a top notch, like, you know, the top 1% of the top 1% of the top 1% talent, right? You give me like the number 60 quarterback in the world and you put him out there, and we all sit here and make jokes on Twitter about how it looks like it's the first time the guy has ever used his legs. Like, how ridiculous and inept do some of these guys look? And they're in the top 100 of the world. Like, Blaine Gabbert is a top 100 quarterback in the world. Like, there's quarterbacks all over. For every guy in the NFL who you laugh at quarterback, and, oh my God, this guy, like, we're going nowhere with this guy. He's garbage. Like, there's 15 other quarterbacks that are teaching a passing camp in their hometown after being the high school and college star, or trying to make it in the arena league or whatever, who couldn't get to that level, okay? Think about that. Because it's true. I remember, again, it's happened many times in the past, especially in these week 16 and 17 games. One of my annual traditions for me as a part-time, small-time football gambler is betting on a team in week 16 or 17 because I think they can still win even though they're resting their starters, and then cursing some backup like John Skelton for costing me money while he goes out there again and it looks like he's never even used his legs, but like they just taught him to walk that morning before he started the game. That's what it looks like with some of these guys. And again, these are the top 96 people in the world at doing this one thing. So if it sounds like I'm making fun of these guys, I don't want to make it. I mean, I shouldn't make it sound like I don't respect what they do, because even the number three quarterback, you know, whoever the worst number three quarterback in the whole league is still the top 100 in the world, and he's still in a spot that there are hundreds of other guys at, you know, the college level, at the minor league level, Canada, whatever, who are just dying to get into that spot and couldn't quite do it. They aren't good enough, but he is. And we make fun of them because they look so inept sometimes. So playing quarterback is really hard. And even if the top 32, just the starters in the league, I've said this before, you know, what are there, like 10 guys, 12 guys who are good enough where you don't crack jokes about them? And even from there on, you start to like get down, even the starters, like the bottom third of the league, you're like, my God, this guy's trash. And he's not trash. He's one of the best in the world. And I know that goes for every position in pro sports. I mean, it's all obviously the top 1% of the top 1%, but especially for quarterback, because of how big of a fall-off you get even after the first 10 or 15 guys. So again, I hope we're not arguing about much. I hope it doesn't matter much, but I think Ryan Griffin, you know, to me seems like, I'm not there. Bruce Arians, they know better. Byron Leftwich, Clyde Christensen, they all know better, you know. But just those are my observations. So take from that what you will. As far as other guys that shined a little bit on Friday night offensively, you know, Bobo Wilson's looking good, made some plays, and I think he's the number four guy right now. If you look at what Bruce Arians has said, if you're trying to, like, read tea leaves or whatever, Arians mentioned, like, and I'm not going to quote exactly, I'm paraphrasing, but he's like, we got a lot of competition right now for this fifth wide receiver spot. And then he mentioned all these names, you know, he's like, Emmanuel Hall, Anthony Johnson, you know, Cortrell, whatever, all the, you know, lower tier receivers we have right now. Didn't mention Bobo Wilson's name. Then he said Bobo Wilson's having a heck of a camp, like kind of after the fact. So it made it sound like, again, I don't know what he meant for sure, but it made it sound like he thinks Bobo Wilson is already the four, and now they're having competition for the five. And what that means for Justin Watson, it could be a little bit of trouble here. I mean, Justin Watson has been outshined by Bobo at receiver. You know, Bobo can return stuff. Justin Watson, it should be noted, led the team in special teams tackles last year, and that when you get down to these, you know, lower roster spots, you know, 3, 4, 5 at the receiver position or at DBs and things like that, obviously what they can do on special teams makes even more of a difference, really, than their value at the position that they play. But if you're looking for, like, position battles to watch, that's one. I think Bobo is doing really well there. Dare is doing really well. Dare Ogunbowale is, I think, pretty well set as the number three running back, at least by the way they've used him and the way he's performed out there behind Barber and Ronald Jones. And then you've got Andre Ellington and Bruce Anderson if they keep four running backs who will be competing for that fourth spot. That's what it looks like to me. I mean, again, I'm not going to pretend like this stuff is set in stone or that I know something that nobody else knows. But that's how it appears to me. And if you look at Ronald Jones, I don't know if anybody noticed, but he like took a weird step early in the game on Friday and then didn't play. He did come back, I think. But then he didn't practice the next day. I think they were just being careful. And I think he's okay, but just, you know, it was something to keep an eye on. I don't think he's hurt seriously or anything like that. On defense, Kevin Minter played really well. Of course, he had the one big splash play where he just completely bull-rushed up the middle and hit the running back as he was receiving the handoff on 5 yards in the backfield. That play got wiped out for defensive holding, but it was still a phenomenal effort by Minter, and it wasn't the only play he made. He was making plays all over the field on Friday night. Jamel Dean, who we didn't see much of in the first preseason game, had a good game. He dropped one of the easiest interceptions anybody will ever see earlier in the game, but then he had another one later. But aside from the interception stuff, he had another pass breakup and just did a much better job in coverage overall as the game went on. Shaq Barrett was another one of those outside rushers who was making a lot of plays. So those are things, again, to look at. And like I always say, we spend in the preseason a lot of time talking about these position battles and talking about, oh, who's there at the four spot at this position or that 3-4 competition at this position. And when the regular season starts, those guys almost will never have any impact on a game as much time as we spend talking about them now. It's because there's nothing to say about Devin White. He's been in camp. He's barely played in the preseason games, as have most of the stars. When are we going to talk about him? We're going to talk about Jameis Winston. He had a good series against the Steelers. Number twos last week. Okay, great. There's nothing to talk about with the guys who are actually going to decide the games once the season starts. But, you know, in any one game, any one guy can have an impact. And whether it's because of an injury or whether it's a special teams play or something like that, there's always players, just like Al Pacino always said in the famous Any Given Sunday locker room speech, the inches we need are all around us. There's plays to be made all around. There's always a play to be made somewhere. And whether it's special teams or not, you know, any one of these guys could impact a game that way at any time. It's just not something you're going to know right now. And so, you know, you look at these position battles and you try and glean what you can glean. But other than that, I'm not going to read too much into Friday night. I will say this much, because as always, I like to be on Twitter during the games, especially when I'm sitting in the TV truck like that. And I see a lot of I follow a lot of Bucks people, both in the media and even fans, too. I just like to hear the chatter. I like to see people going back and forth. I like to hear what other people are saying. So the usual refrain, oh my God, this sucks, preseason football is the worst, is very common. It was still better on Friday night than not having a game at all. And let me tell you this. I do this every year, and I'll tell you now, although it's probably too late for most of you who've already bought season tickets. One of the biggest jokes out there, one of the biggest crimes out there committed against the fans by NFL owners is selling season ticket packages in 10-ticket packages and making those two preseason games exactly the same as the 8 regular season games. If you have a ticket, and I'm just making a number up, but if you have a ticket that's worth $45 a game, you know, let's say you have one of the upper deck seats, $45 a game. 8 times 45 is 360. But you don't pay 360 because there's two preseason games, and you pay $45 for those two. The same exact price. It could be Monday Night Football in December, with a playoff spot on the line, or it can be what happened Friday night, $45 for that seat. Now, the obvious value of that seat is probably $10 on a preseason. Like, if I'd wanted to go to the game as a fan Friday night, although the rain, again, dampened things with even scalpers, but if I just walked around outside the stadium Friday night, you'd probably get in for $5 if somebody didn't just give you tickets, which I'll bet you, if I did a preseason challenge to just walk around and procure free tickets, I bet you I could do it. Like, I bet you I could get somebody to say, man, just take them. I got two people that didn't come. Nobody's buying it. You just take, I don't care. Just take, you know, you could probably do that. But certainly $5 would get you in, if not $10. Okay? But you got to pay $45 for all 10 of them. So it's $450 for your season tickets. And that's bad enough. But if you have really expensive tickets, the ones that are like $100, $150, $200 a game, now it's a real, you know, you just paid $200 for a preseason football game where some chump off the street like me who bought tickets outside can walk right down there and sit next to you because there's nobody there. And even if there are people there, aren't that many? Again, I don't blame anybody. I mean, a rainy preseason game like that, I wasn't expecting much like I would for a regular season game. Point is, here's what you can do to combat that. And it's not perfect, but here's a system that I if I was going to do it, I would do it this way. Just buy your season tickets after the second preseason game already happened. That's it. Just buy them after the – you don't have to buy them before the first – it's not like a deadline. Like, oh, I got to buy these season tickets right now to get my full – just wait. Like Friday night, they play the Browns, second preseason game. Once that game is over, now buy season tickets. Now you're just buying eight at face value. Do you think they're not going to sell them to you? Do you think they're going to say they don't want your money? Oh, too late. You didn't buy the preseason. No, they'll just go call them. Call them. Say, I want season tickets, all eight home games. Or you can buy the partial 4-4, too, and they'll give it to you. Now, there's pitfalls to that. Obviously, one, if you're somebody who likes to have, like, the same seats year to year, yeah, that could be a little bit of a problem because you have to drop them at the end of every year and then re-up them so it wouldn't be the same. So I get that part. But I know you're probably thinking, my God, this guy is, like, one of the cheapest human beings I've ever heard of in my life. It's not about being cheap. Look, if you have a problem with paying for the preseason games, that's just one way to go about it is all I'm saying. And if you don't have a problem with it, or if you have a slight problem with it, but it's not enough to go jump through all these hoops and bend over backwards, I get that too. Pay it off. You can get great seats at a pretty good price for the Buccaneers. I did it for many, many years. And, you know, like I said, when they fix the uniforms, I'll do it again. But in the meantime, that was the story. Oh, and one other bit, and Greg Allman had this on his Twitter feed, is that this year the Tampa Sports Authority, who usually you get the attendance numbers from them, the actual turnstile count, like that's public information. They can announce whatever they want as far as attendance was X for this game, but then the actual number of people that came through the gate with a ticket, whether the ticket was free or not or whatever, is public information that the TSA has that when it's requested they have to give. Apparently, according to Greg Allman, this year there's a new ticketing system. I'm making air quotes as I say that. And so they don't have those counts. So now they'll just be able to have one attendance number given out, and that's the one they control. And they can say, you know, they can donate 5,000 tickets for free and say, oh, 5,000, you know, whatever. But I don't really care about that much stuff that much anymore. Right now, especially with this team, I know where we're at, and I know where we're going to be, and if this team, just like any other year, is 7-2 or, you know, 9-4 in December or whatever, and they're playing big games for playoff spots, everything will be fine. Whether that happens this year or not is another matter entirely. There is some news on that front, though, and I don't know if anybody saw it. It just came out this morning. I'm recording this on Monday morning this week, and I'm going to do another one later in the week, so don't worry. But you know, right now they're negotiating a new CBA, and really, I don't want to sound like hyperbolic here or anything, but the future of the league, you know, we're all wrapped up in preseason, Bucks Dolphins Friday, you know, who the fourth receiver for the Bucks is. The future structure of the NFL is actually being determined right now. And so, you know, they wanted, originally they said they wanted to have a new CBA in place, have it all done, completely take out the possibility of a work stoppage next season and get it done before this season started. Doesn't look like that's going to happen now, but they are still in talks, the NFLPA, the Players Association, with the league and the owners negotiating how everything's going to work from here on in. So we've heard all these proposals about getting rid of preseason games. Of course, the owners want to add regular season games. There's all these different ways. The main thing is no one wants to give up any revenue which is obviously always the case with these guys. So how do we do this? Well, there's a proposal now that appears to have both sides at least somewhat interested. And I'm not saying this is going to happen yet, but there was an article on NFL.com of all places. Not like I'm getting this from some, you know, backroom source. It says, the headline, players, owners open to playoff expansion as CBA talks resume. So the 18-game thing is really getting a lot of resistance from the players, as it should. I think 16 games is perfect. I hope they don't change that. They want to cut down the preseason games, though. How do they do that? They lose money, like we just talked about. All this money we spend, and that's just the gate revenue. You know, how do they do it? Well, they're talking about now, I'm reading direct quote from the article, NFL players and owners have expressed an openness to expanding the playoff field from 12 to 14 teams, a change that would help offset revenue lost by cutting the preseason to 3 games, which is considered likely as the sides begin, again, which is considered likely, the preseason part, as the sides begin another bargaining session today in Chicago, according to numerous sources familiar with the talk. Now, this is on NFL.com, so I know it's written by a reporter, but it's always funny to me when the NFL is one of the entities involved in this, not like a third party reporting this, and they say, oh, according to sources inside the room. You're inside the room, so I don't, you know, I don't understand, according to numerous sources familiar with the talks. I read on, an expanded playoff format has not yet been formally proposed, nor has expanding the regular season, which players continue to oppose. And it is possible the preseason could be shortened even without adding regular season or postseason games. But sources say that adding 2 playoff games remains squarely in the conversation amidst unexpectedly positive dialogue that continued to yield progress in meetings. So I guess they were thinking, well, we're going to get pushback on this too. They didn't. Players seem to be okay with this. Now, they say that they could take away a preseason game even without adding anything, regular season or playoffs. I think that's unlikely. I'd be fine with it. I think 16 games with 2 or 3 preseason games is fine. But again, I'm not sure how I feel about this. I'm adamantly opposed to 18 regular season games, but I'm not sure if I'm more opposed to that or more opposed to expanding the playoff field. I think the playoff field is perfect the way it is. I think 6 teams, 4 division winners, 2 wild cards. I've said it before on this show, the only change I would make to the NFL playoff format, I'd still take the 4 division winners, and I'd still take the 2 next best records that didn't win the division, but I would then seed them by record. I would not automatically give 1 through 4 to the 4 division winners. If there's a wild card team that's 11-5 and a division winner who's 10-6, the wild card team would still be seeded ahead of them, straight record. But a division win would automatically guarantee you a playoff spot. Wouldn't guarantee you home field like it does now in that first game, but you're in. So, I mean, that part I would still do. But you could be a 6 seed if you win your division at 8-8 or 9-7, and that's the 6th best record, so be it. That's the only change I would make, though. And who doesn't love playoff football? If they add 2 teams, they'd be adding 4 teams total, so they'd be adding 4 more playoff games, basically, to get those teams eliminated, to get down to 1 team at the Super Bowl. And who wouldn't love 4 more? I mean, you'd have 3 playoff games instead of 2 on Wild Card Saturday and Wild Card Sunday, and then maybe 3 more next week. I mean, I'm trying to think of how they would do it. Obviously, you'd have 1 through 7 now on both sides. So they'd be adding 2 playoff games, excuse me, not 4. They'd be adding 2 total teams, not 2 teams per conference. I misspoke. So if you add 2 teams total, that's 1 through 7 in each conference. And so, yeah, now you've got to play an extra game, whether it's between 6 and 7 just to get into that 6th spot, or whether they do it with more, you know, buys. And I'm not sure how they would do it. But, you know, I don't hate playoff football, obviously, but I've always cautioned. I cautioned against this in college football, too, and I've said it on this show many times. You know, when you have a really good thing going and you think, hey, this thing is so awesome, let's just have more of it. It sounds, in theory, easy. Oh, hey, good thing, more of good thing. But if you add more of good thing, then the good thing becomes less good, then you really didn't get there, did you? Even though you added more of it. And I think there's virtue in being conservative with this stuff. And again, I know that that's not you know, the goal is to try and make as much money as they can and not have a radical change. And this probably wouldn't be considered radical by some people. I consider it radical, though. But anyway, that's out there. So just keep that in mind. Like, while we're all wrapped up in, you know, the Bucks preseason, this and that and the other, stuff with far, far more reaching consequences is happening in boardrooms, meeting rooms, at hotels, in different major cities across America when they schedule these meetings once every couple of weeks to hammer out the new CBA. That's what the league is going to look like for years going forward. And remember, once they do something, there's no going back. So it's not like, oh, we'll do 14 for this next CBA for 5-10 years and then see what happens. It ain't going back to 12. Once they do it, that's it. So just keep that in mind. And I'm not sure how I feel about it. I really just wish it would stay like it is, only one less. I think 3 preseason games is fine. And like I said, I do 1 home, 1 road, 1 neutral site, bring the games to the people all around the country that maybe don't have NFL in their cities, play it at college stadiums, you know, play it Iowa City, Iowa, where the University of Iowa is, play at Kinnick Stadium there for the Midwesterners, play one at the Horseshoe in Columbus, play one in play Bucks-Jags in Gainesville at the Swamp, or in Tallahassee, let the Saints and the Jaguars play in Tallahassee, you know? That's what I do for the third game. And I do, you know, 16 of those every year, and everybody else, 1 home game, 1 road game. The third one's the neutral site game. But anyway, one other thing I want to let you guys know about, and on Thursday's show, I'm going to talk a lot more about the Jason Light thing. Jason Light got the contract extension. I haven't mentioned it yet. It's one of those things. I'll get more in depth with it on Thursday, but it was actually done in January, and they just announced it now. So it's not like this just came out. But it's obviously a package deal with Arians. And if you look at the on-field product, if you look at the results, if you look at the drafts, Jason Light hasn't done a ton to make you be like, oh, yeah, got to extend that guy. I mean, I don't dislike Jason Light. I'm just, you know, this is a results thing. We can all see that. There hasn't been anything where you go, oh, man, Jason Light, got to lock this guy up, you know. Except for one thing, and that's that he brought Bruce Arians here. Bruce Arians probably made it a condition of him coming here. And that's why this happened in January, which is also when they hired Bruce Arians. And it's just a package deal. And if they hadn't done that, then Bruce Arians wouldn't be here. And it probably would have been a total overthrow of everything. I mean, Jameis Winston may well not still be the quarterback. Maybe you think that's a good thing. Maybe you wish they had done that. But it would have been a whole different thing. So they kept Light, fired Cutter, got Arians in here because of Light. That's where we are. And that's why this extension happened. We'll talk about it more coming up on Thursday's show. I'm going to talk about the Antonio Brown thing a little more on Thursday, although when it comes to helmets, I have some personal thoughts on those. My helmet that I still use with the Dunedin Pirates semi-pro football team is 20 years old and probably very unsafe, but nevertheless, I like it, so I use it. I kind of get that whole part of it with Antonio Brown, but again, more on that on Thursday. And then finally, I want to mention the fridge schedules, okay? People have been asking me about them, if they're coming back this year. We did them last year, had a lot of success. People emailed me, said, Bobby, I want a fridge schedule. I emailed them to you. This year, I talked to the Joes about it. I think we can just link it right on the website. So if you go to joebucksfan.com, and we haven't done this yet, but it'll say something like, click here for your printable 2019 Tampa Bay Buccaneers schedule. And, you know, this goes back to when I was a young kid. My grandmother, my dad's mom, Celia Fenton, bless her heart, she loved football. And one of the ways I always knew it was football season is because she'd clip the little schedules out of the newspaper. And she was always the Bucks. She was an FSU fan. She went to FSU in like the 40s. So there was the FSU one there. And then whatever high school my dad and my uncle were coaching at, because they were high school football coaches growing up. And those three, side by side, it'd be in order. High school, college, pro. Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They'd be on her fridge. And she'd always write in the score. She'd put X's for wins and O's for losses, which I still do too as a tribute to her and my home fridge. And she'd write the X and the score, and it was football season, you know? Like, seeing those things up there just was one of the things. So I kind of tried to take it to another level when I got older. I started typing them out on Microsoft Word and make them bigger, you know, make them bolder. And then after a couple of years of that, I said, hey, let's throw the team logos on there. Let's add a splash of color, really dress this up. So I'd put a big Bucks logo on top. Then every little team, I'd put the team logo next to it. And I always put those on my fridge. Big 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. And I do the Gators and the Bucks in my house. And I said that last year. You know what? Every, everybody should be able to do this. You can print these out. I'll just put the link. You can. It's a Microsoft Word file, and you print them out, and you can put them anywhere. And we got a great response. People were sending me pictures of their fridges or their office cubicle. So I'm going to do it again this year. I haven't typed them up yet, but I'm going to type them this week. I'll do the Bucks. I'll do the Gators. I can do FSU if enough people want FSU, and maybe I can do USF too, because they're fun to do. It's like a hobby. I enjoy doing it. I love logos and team names, all that. So I'll do all that. We'll try and get it up there. And like I said, I'll keep you posted. But by later in this week's show, I should have them up. So email me if you want to. Again, it's bobbygameday@yahoo.com. You don't have to, because you can go to the website once we get this done and do it. I'll alert everybody on Twitter if you follow me at bobbygameday, BobbyGameDay. You can check it out or email me bobbygameday@yahoo.com. So again, I'll do a show later in the week. We'll get back on schedule. Friday night game again for the third preseason game against the Cleveland Browns. Of course, it's the one everybody always says. You can have a drinking game this week for how many times you hear, this is the one that matters. The starters will play the most. This is a dress audition, you know, whatever you want to say. But it is. It's Friday night, and it'll be Bucks-Browns. And then after that, we've got the game next Thursday. But think about it. I mean, you know, we've got 3 weeks. You know, it was 3 Sundays from yesterday, and they're playing real live ball. And it's a game week this week in college football. We got Florida-Miami, baby, in Orlando on Saturday. Like, it is here. Like, we are done. This is a game week now. Not even a preseason. This is an actual live action thing. So I'm all fired up. I know you guys are too. Thanks to the Joes for having me on. I can't get enough of it right now. Hopefully you can either. I will be back next week. But in the meantime, the Joes, thanks to all of you who emailed and everything else. Thanks to all you for listening. It'll be another edition of the Free Stretch leading up to the game on Friday, or maybe I'll do another one late Friday night after the game is over. Either way, I'll let you know. And until then, thank you guys so much. Be safe this week. It's an unusual, usually I'm getting you ready for the weekend right now, but it's Monday. So have a great week. Stay focused. Get done what you got to get done, and we'll get ready for some football. I'm Bobby Fenton. That's the Free Stretch, and wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.